Newsmakers is brought to you by the generosity of listeners like you, including the Iliopian Oracles Group and Pam Adams. I'm Gary Moore on today's program.
I had an older brother who was shot and killed at the age of 23 some years ago. Plenty of friends and friends of mine, their kids were murdered, you know, due to gun violence. So that basically what made me want to sit down and write this song. And I wanted to keep it real. I wanted the lyrics to hit, and I wasn't pulling no punches. When I say, when you die, there's no such thing as meet me at the crossroad.
Youth activist and entertainer Mike Alexander talks about the relevance of his song, Take the Guns from Your Sons. Our conversation taking place after a week of gun violence that claimed the lives of two men and left several people, including four juveniles, hospitalized. Also,
people are blaming young people for what we might describe as a lack of control. And then we see other people who are pointing a finger towards the parents, right? Some people are even saying the lack of police presence in the communities or the neighborhoods that are most affected. But a big part of the conversation or a piece of the puzzle that underreported or underplayed, not discussed enough, is definitely the state of mental health.
Dr. Venus Evans-Winters says missing from the discussion about solutions is the need for coordinated, culturally relevant, citywide mental health services. Before my interview with Mike Alexander, here are some brief comments by Peoria Mayor Rita Ali and Police Chief Eric Echevarria.
I'm asking for calm, peace, and cooperation. Choose peace over retaliation. Choose unity over division. A violent crime that occurs anywhere in our city affects everyone in our city, and we all deserve better.
I realize that we have had a sudden surge of violence, and I want to reassure the public that you will see a more visible presence of officers in and around the neighborhoods where the violence is occurring. That includes more officers throughout the holiday weekend, to include the Illinois State Police.
The police chief says Thursday morning shootings on West Antoinette and Helen Streets that claimed the lives of 25-year-old Billy Chaplin and 19-year-old Damar Watts are connected, not gang-related, instead targeted attacks between small groups and conflicts. The chief says one arrest has been made, but declined to provide any other details. Here now, my conversation with Mike Alexander.
I'm sad, man. I mean, to see what's happening in our community and to see that our leadership hasn't been on top of things like they should have been. But I do see that everything is starting to happen now. You know, people starting to, you know, try to make a change. But it's just really saddens me, man.
What do you think are some of the root causes of it? We've heard that it's not gang related. It's just conflicts between different people. A lot of people, when they talk about solutions, start listing, well, parents need to do this. We need to have more programs for young people. We need more mentors. We need to teach young people how to resolve their conflicts without violence. You know, we need mental health professionals, et cetera.
When you talk about parents, I got two things. I want to talk about the parents and one of the reasons why this thing is happening. Sometimes parents need to be parented. You know what I'm saying? You cannot blame the parents for the behavior of these what's going on with these kids, right? I believe the music has a lot to do with it, and I know we're going to go into that. But you did ask about is it gang related? And I don't buy the fact that people saying that it's not gang related, because if you involve in this lifestyle, you either in a gang or you gang related. So I refuse to let somebody tell me that these so-called cliques aren't considered gangs and it's just beef amongst some groups that's, you know, at war. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the music, because a lot of people in Peoria know you for your hit song, Take the Guns from Your Sons. You performed at Soul Fest. I was there. It was outstanding.
Thank you.
And, you know, I've always been a fan, going back to Daughter Bright and Soda Pop Mike, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And some of this comes from your personal experience. You know, you had tragedy in your family. You know what this stuff is about out here in the streets. And your song was really, I think, redemptive for you. I remember talking to you when you first came out with it, mm-hmm. and how you were just hoping to be real with young people. I remember you stressing that you wanted real lyrics. Mm-hmm. And one of the lyrics that stuck out to me was you made reference to a song that was popular at the time, Meet Me at the Crossroads. And you say, you know, there's no Meet Me at the Crossroads.
Absolutely not.
Talk to me about the message of the song.
Well, Take the Guns from Your Sons came from, you know what's really crazy, Gary? I wrote this song 23 years ago.
And it's still relevant.
And I was getting so discouraged. And if you don't mind, I want to share this story. I seen what's his name? One of the Winding Brothers. He was telling this story about he wrote this song 40 years ago. And it was called Somebody's Gotta Tell Him, or something like that. And he said the way he came up with that song was he had just preached a message at a church. And they was leaving the church. And they was driving through the hood, and a bunch of people was fighting. And the people that was in the car with him was kind of, you know, they was like, wow, these people, they don't need to be doing this. You know, our people is, you know, we need to do better, and, you know, just passing judgment. And he said he came up with this song, Somebody Gotta Tell Him, or Who's Gonna Tell Him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically the same thing about Take the Guns from Your Sons. I wrote this song, like I say, 23 years ago. And there was some gun violence that was taking place. Some gun violence happened in my family. I had an older brother who was shot and killed at the age of 23 some years ago. Plenty of friends friends of mine, their kids were murdered, you know, due to gun violence. So that basically what made me want to sit down and write this song. And I wanted to keep it real. I wanted the lyrics to hit. And I wasn't pulling no punches. When I say, when you die, there's no such thing as meet me at the crossroad. You know, a lot of the young people die and say, you know what, he's in a better place. I'm going to meet him at the crossroad. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, you got to go before God. You understand what I'm saying? When you leave this life. And, again, like I say, crossroad. Ain't no meet nobody at the crossroad, bro.
You also have gunshots in the song. What was the intent of that? Just to let people know that this is real.
I wanted to keep it real. I wanted people, the intro, I needed people to hear the sirens. I needed people to hear the gunshots. Because I when I came up with it, in order for people to understand, they got, even if they're hearing it, they got to have a visual. You know what I'm saying? They got to see it even when hearing it.
I remember talking to an emergency room doctor, Dr. Ellsberg Clark. He used to be in Peoria. He was a photographer. And he and I were talking about how when you look in the movies and you see people get shot, like Bruce Willis or Rambo or somebody, and they get shot, and they still walk around with a bullet in them, and they shoot somebody, and they, you know, get into a fight and roll over and crash out a window and fall down. And then at the end, you know, he's bandaged and bloody and walks away with his girlfriend or whatever. And it kind of romanticizes it. And we see that in a lot of the rap videos where guys are flashing guns and flashing the gang life and it glorifying it. Your song takes a different approach. You're basically telling people there's no glory in that. And I remember talking to Dr. Clark, and he was like, when somebody gets shot, there's no fighting somebody and jumping out of a window or anything like that. And he described what a bullet does to your body and how it shatters your insides and goes through. And this is real.
Yeah, well, a lot of the young people, when they're watching these videos, they don't realize, see, the power, when they listen to these lyrics, the power of life and death is in the tongue. You understand what I'm saying? And what they don't understand is what's been happening it's been a demonic release in their verbiage and in the lyrics. And these lyrics are so powerful to where these kids, they do not realize and they don't understand that the thing that they listening to are the very thing that's killing them. You know, and again, they think it's theatrics and they don't realize it. And it's sad, man, because these kids are listening to demonic lyrics, man. These lyrics are serial killer lyrics to me, man. You know what I'm saying? And when they come up with, 10 years, 11 years ago, when drill music was introduced, man, they don't have a clue, man. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, because, you know, I teach music, and I ask my students sometimes, what do you listen to? And they'll list a bunch of artists, you know, Polo G, King Von, Chief Keef, NBA Youngboy, NLE Choppa, Lil Durk, Lil Baby, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. And I have SiriusXM. You know, I listen to a lot of different stuff. I have to mm-hmm. in order to stay up on it.
I get it.
And, you know, I have a radio station here, and I teach music, so I got to listen to some of everything. And whenever I listen to the Hip Hop Nation station and I hear song after song, man, I mean, Bang Bang, N-Word, It's Your Funeral, you know, He Was No Good, So I Had to Put Him in the Wood, I Got My Glock, I'ma Clear the Block, I'm thinking, wow, I mean, this is toxic messaging. I don't listen to it, but if my 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th graders are listening to that, then I'm concerned.
And you know, they've grown up off this music, Gary. You know what I'm saying? Let me say 5th and 6th, 7th graders, 10 years ago, this music was introduced to them, you know, as little bitty toddlers in the car with their parents that really, like I said earlier, probably need parenting skills themselves. So this music, man, has been released into our community to basically destroy, you know, whatever's supposed to be next in our community.
Well, Maurice White, the late founder of Earth, Wind & Fire, talks about neuroscience research mm-hmm. on how powerful music is and mm-hmm. music having a way to get into your cultural and emotional DNA. And it, basically what you're saying is that people are being programmed. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about a young person who hasn't matured yet,
right,
who's still like a sponge mm-hmm. for information. Mm-hmm. Consider this. You and I think I'm a little older than you, but I have the Flintstones song in my head. Mm-hmm. Flintstones. I have the Andy Griffith whistle. Mm-hmm. I have Gilligan's Island. Just sit right back. I To All Beef Patties. You know, all these things are in my head, mm-hmm. and I'm 60-something. Mm-hmm. These things got in my head when I was 10, 12, 14 years old. They're still there. Mm-hmm. So to your point, you know, what's going to be in these kids' heads as they get to be adults?
They're actually being raised on it, man. Like, you know, I was listening to music like Sugar Hill, you know, what was that? Sugar Rapper's Hill, okay. Delight.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And LL.
Grandmaster Flash.
Yeah, that stuff, you know. And these kids are, you know, and people may say I'm pouring salt, but it needs to stop, man. You know what I'm saying? And because when I watched the video the other day, and the lyrics in the name of the song was titled You Can't Run When We Shootin'. You know what I'm saying? These are the things that our kids are listening to.
So this is a soundtrack to their little gangster life.
Yeah. Yeah, and they say it's reality music, but it didn't become reality music until they start putting it into the atmosphere. You know what I'm saying? And once the thing is out there in the atmosphere, it has to develop, man. You know what I'm saying? They say, well, you don't understand. You know, you know, you old and you don't get it, man. This is how we living. No, the enemy, the devil has came and planted this seed in these kids' head, and this is really all they know.
I mean, think about the young ladies who rap. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some H's in this house. There's some H's in this house.
And you know what's really sad, man? Freedom of speech is real. You know what I'm saying? And I believe the only way to change that, man, and a lot of people may not want me to go here, but the Bible says in 2 Chronicles 7:14, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from them wicked ways, then he will heal the land. And it seemed like, man, like, not throwing off on clergy, because I commend those guys who was out there the other day that was praying and speaking life into the community. But something needs to happen, man. We need to get out there and really, really fight this thing, man, because we wrestle not against flesh and blood. You understand? We wrestle against principalities in high places. And it's deeper. Gary, people think that we can change this thing by going and sitting at the bar stool, you know what I'm saying, and trying to strategize on how to rectify this thing. It starts at the altar, bro. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not trying to sound like this turn into a religious conversation, but to me, that thing is so real, man. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you mentioned freedom of speech, and what I used to tell people, because I'm a communications person, is to me, freedom of speech is like freedom of liquid. So think about that analogy. Freedom of speech, freedom of liquid. So I got a house that's burning, and it's burning with poverty, unemployment, drugs, you name whatever malady we have in our community, and this house is burning with that. Freedom of liquid. So I could put some gasoline in a pail, and that's freedom of liquid. And I could throw it on the house. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen?
It's going to burn down, bro.
You know, or I could get some water and throw it on the house. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, freedom of speech, that goes both ways.
That's true.
You know, and so you could have something positive to say, mm-hmm. or you could, as we've been talking, pour gasoline on it. That's why I share your assessment of what our music is. Hey, we're running out of time. I wanted to thank you for coming by the studio. We play your song.
Appreciate it, man.
But I want to get to a point, Mike, where we don't play your song, right? Well, that's what it's all about,
that's
right?
That's true. But even saying that, to get to the point where you don't play the song, if you play the song, it still put consciousness in the minds of the people.
Yeah.
Basically intervention. You know what I'm saying?
So, no, I get you.
I really appreciate it, man. I appreciate
that. No, but it's like
the rotation,
whenever
bro.
Whenever there's a tragedy, a shooting, people who listen to WPMV, they know that somewhere in that hour, mm-hmm. around that newscast or around that time, your song is going to play. And I'm just hoping for the season where it's like, you know, hey, Mike, we didn't play your song for like 2 months, man, because there was no shooting.
But it still needs to be in the atmosphere. You know what I'm saying?
No. Then you have to make another song. thank you for taking the guns from your son.
My man, thank you for giving me this opportunity too, man, to speak, you know, what I've been, you know, what's been on my mind for a long time, man.
All right, Mike Alexander, thanks.
Thank you, man.
Now to my conversation with Ohio State University professor and clinician, Dr. Venus Evans Winters. What are we missing in our discussion about these things?
Yeah, so I think that what I've seen so far is people are blaming young people for what we might describe as a lack of control. And then we see other people who are pointing a finger towards the parents. Right. Some people are even saying the lack of police presence in the communities or the neighborhoods that are most affected. But a big part of the conversation or a piece of the puzzle that's underreported or underplayed, not discussed enough, is definitely the state of mental health, not only in the local community, but across the nation at large.
Specifically, are we talking about some of the people who are involved in these things need therapy, they are undiagnosed, or what?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of all of that. I don't think that the city, the local community has a strategic plan for mental health counseling, in particular trauma. So usually when you begin to see a surge in interpersonal violence or even violence among youth, really what we're looking at, and it's not specific to Peoria City or Peoria County. This is a national crisis right now. We do have a youth mental health crisis. So in Peoria in particular, for example, we know that our young people are experiencing what we call intergenerational trauma. We also see people who have been undiagnosed or underdiagnosed or not treated for mental health issues. And we're really talking about prominent issues such as anxiety, depression, anger management, low self-esteem, low confidence. And so a lot of people are going to try to blame the individual. That's not an individual problem per se. It's actually societal and community-based. So over the last 2.5 years, for example, many of our young people who are involved in these acts or who are victims of this type of violence, most of them have spent time away from the curriculum or time out of school because of a pandemic. Many families, especially black people, low-income people, people with elderly family members, they also just survived the COVID-19 pandemic, which, as you know, there's been a surge. So how many people in our local community have lost family members to COVID-19, right? Not to mention, during the health pandemic, we also saw an increase in domestic violence or intimate violence, right, between basically domestic partners or even family violence in the home. So when do we talk about that? Like, what are our young people witnessing? Instead of pointing a finger, one intervention might be full mental health assessment and full mental health counseling, full mental health intervention. And this is about, on the one hand, non-regulated central nervous systems. On the other hand, we're talking about transgenerational trauma, populations, people, neighborhoods, communities, racial, ethnic groups that have been neglected for generations. And on the other hand, we're talking about recent chronic stress that's impacting our young people. So time away from the curriculum certainly can affect one's self-esteem and self-concept. Time away from the curriculum, where people don't get to see themselves in history. They don't get to see themselves as, you know, people who are part of a larger cultural group who have contributed not only to the city, the state, but also their nation and their people's history. Also, are we treating young people who are survivors of domestic violence or interpersonal relationship violence? And, Gary, I'm not sure that we have taken a systematic approach taking care of the mental health and overall well-being of our young people.
And so who's qualified, besides yourself, to really deal with that? So let me just get some examples, hypothetical. And these could be very specific. You have a crime. There's a homicide. Mm-hmm. The victim leaves behind mom and maybe a younger brother or sister.
Yeah.
Part of what I hear you saying is that family needs therapy. And what I also hear you saying is that therapy should be culturally relevant therapy. On the other hand, the family of the perpetrator, that family could also use some mental health therapy. But my question is, where do they get that? Where do they go? You know, we have a law and justice system where, okay, this person goes on trial and then the family is consoled. But you're saying a part of that consolation needs to be ongoing therapy, and that the community, the school, the church, the whomever, everybody needs to know that, hey, we need to recognize this, identify it, and get that person help. And so where do they go for help?
Exactly, Gary. I don't think that, you know, our young people under the age of 17, and I would go so far as even to say people under the age of 25, which I've testified before the U.S. Congress. I've served as an expert for the Department of Justice. We really need to start thinking about the type of services we're providing to young people under the age of 25, but certainly under the age of 18 or 17 and under. But our young people should not have to wait until they are, you know, charged with a crime, or they are sanctioned to juvenile detention or the criminal justice system, what have you. So we have to start thinking about a community approach. We do need more treatment centers. We do need more home visits where we can serve the entire family. Gary, did you know that research shows that black girls, black young women are actually have the highest survival rates. Could you imagine? So that means that people who are victims of crime, they leave behind loved ones. So black girls are actually the least likely to be treated. I'm not saying that we don't need anything for young boys, but that's surprising, especially when we know that usually the perpetrators of these crimes and the direct victims are boys. But I think that in young men, but I think you bring up a good point that we need to take a holistic view when it comes to who are the victims of crime and what are going to be the residual effects of this type of violence, right? And so we do need school-based, culturally responsive mental health specialists. That's one. Two, we do need people who are in the community. So that might look like counselors at the Y, the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Clubs, of course, our religious institutions, right? We also may need people like, so our, reinvest in our social service organizations where we're not necessarily policing families, but we are providing services to our families. I think it's also important, when I looked at some of the perpetrators of these crimes, alleged perpetrators of these crimes, and the victims and the families affected, I also think that we need more group-based interventions for our boys. I do think that a lot of our local community leaders and many of our, you know, families are led by mostly women. But I think that we need to start thinking. We shouldn't have to wait until they're addicted to drugs or they are in gangs and prisons and juvenile detentions. We need some more social groups, in particular group-based mental health counseling for our boys. And I mean highly qualified. I'm speaking of culturally responsive psychiatrists, licensed clinical professionals. So, for example, I'm not simply a social worker. I'm not simply a mental health counselor. I am a clinical complex trauma professional. My entire job over the last 15, 20 years, besides being a professor and knowing the research, I have to know the brain, I have to know the body, I have to understand culture, and I have to understand policy. And so how we can put that in layperson's terms, I don't think I'm saying anything that nobody else has said here. Oh, we need counselors. We do need counselors. But we need counselors who understand youth development. They understand the history of racial segregation and the impact of poverty, and I mean economic destitution, long-term poverty, on the mental health and well-being of our young people and their developing brains. And then we'll teach the youth how to bring awareness to, you know, other issues that affect them, such as, you know, food insecurity, housing insecurity, as well as overall, you know, what are their mental health issues? And they'll name it for you. They'll tell you, I'm anxious all the time. They'll tell you, I get mad too easy. I want to control my temper. They'll say, sometimes I'm depressed. I can't even get out of bed, doc. I want to know that. I want to know that language. And then that way, we're teaching young people to take care of each other as opposed to this very competitive, you know, mindset and mentality. When they understand that there are larger social issues at play, larger issues of political neglect at play, then Gary, they'll be more likely to take care of each other and not turn on each other.
Very well said. Dr. Venus Evans-Winters, always a pleasure to speak with you. We'll continue this discussion at another time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Gary.
You've been listening to Newsmakers on WPNV. Newsmakers is made possible by the generosity of listeners like you, including the Iliopian Oracle Group and Pam Adams. Newsmakers on WPNV. WPNV. We're Peoria's neighborhood voice.